Well, hello and welcome to another episode of What's Brewing CISFA. What's Brewing CISFA is a podcast produced for the California Community Colleges Student Financial Aid Administrators Association. I'm your host, Dennis Schrader. I serve as the 2020-2021 CISFA president. Dana Yarbrough, my co-host, has wandered off into the woods, or she's still doing her floors at her house and is unavailable today. Either way, we're going to move on and have a show. So let's get started. And welcome to another episode of What's Brewing CISFA. Let's start with our first cup of the morning. Or I should say, your first cup of whatever you're pouring yourself at whatever time you're listening to the show. We do record in the morning normally. And as I said, my co-host Dana Yarbrough is unavailable right now. She has been busy, mired in a bit of home improvements. They had a leaky pipe over this pandemic, ruined some floors, ruined some ceilings. And so it's a little hard for her to log in remotely and not have a sound of hammers and saws and other noises in the background. So I've in a sense given her a few days off here from the podcast. But it doesn't mean we won't have a podcast. So today we're doing an episode that I thought I'd probably have covered in pieces and parts along the way, but I thought it would be a good time to for financial aid professionals out there to explore the topic of books. In particular, books about financial aid. So I just bought one recently, and I just read it because, like all good books, it was short and to the point, so you can't top that. But there are a lot of good books out there about financial aid, and so for those who've ever seen me on a Zoom meeting, they'll know that behind my head is my bookshelves, and at work, at least until the start of this pandemic or maybe a few months in, most of my books about higher education, education in general, and financial aid were housed at my office. I had an IKEA bookshelf that supported a gigantic printer in my office and a Keurig coffee maker for the staff. And underneath were the little cubby holes for all the books. But seeing that they're doing some deep cleaning on campus, and also I wanted to have some more books to fill in behind my head here on Zoom meetings throughout the week with the staff and others, I brought most of those books home. So I've been staring at them for a while, and I thought it would be a good time to talk about books about our profession. Now, these are books that cover everything from what parents and students need to know about financial aid to stuff for professionals. And so they're not in any particular order. I pulled off about 7 or 8 of them from my shelf for today. And I'm just going to talk through them. Now, the good thing is I will put all of these into the show notes for today so that you, if you hear about a book that you're interested in, you can go out and get it. And again, whether you buy physical books, Kindle, Nook, or other versions of them, I leave that always to you. I'll say I've owned 3, maybe 4 different Nook book readers from Barnes & Noble. I bought one for a friend's kid one time because I thought it was a good Christmas gift, especially at the time, early in the world of electronic books like this. They were relatively indestructible. They were single focus, so they didn't have internet and everything else. And they were a good way to get hundreds of classic books for very little money from Barnes & Noble. But I'll say I never really took on to it. And as slowly as the ones that I bought for myself died away, I guess never replaced them. I never got an Amazon Firebook or whatever they are. I always forget the name on that. I just don't read them as often. And I think there are some studies out there, and this probably just applies to me and maybe a few others, that reading books, you don't have as good of a comprehension level when you read electronic books. And it's partly due to the nature of reading off of a screen versus reading off of something very tactile like paper. But again, I leave it to you how you may want to buy books. But I do think that all of us in our financial aid profession owe it to our personal development, our professional development, to keep up on our subject and know that there are reference materials out there other than some far-flung websites that, again, you may not be able to source who is providing that information. So let's kick this off. The first book that I have is called How to Pay for College When You're Broke by Jessica Brown. So I may have mentioned this in a past podcast recently that I was waiting for the book to arrive, and it has. And it's a fairly small book, but this is the woman who is the founder of College Girl or College Girl Foundation. I think it's one and the same. And she's a former financial aid administrator, worked at, I believe, Howard University, and that she works now to help students and parents, primarily of first generation and low income and minority backgrounds, apply for financial aid and college. Like I said, it's a short book, How to Pay for College When You're Broke, the ultimate guide for students and families to finance a post-secondary education. And if anything, I'll say after reading it in about a day, it's very straightforward. It's very easy to read for a parent or student. So us as professionals probably wouldn't get a whole lot out of it. It's well-structured. You know, it talks about things to keep in mind for college. I mean, it's well laid out from everything about saving for college and not to get yourself too worried about, you know, trying to save 100% of the money you'll need for college, but to know that the sooner, I mean, like with everything when you're investing, the sooner you start, the better off you are with returns. You know, so literally the book talks about envisioning your newborn in a mortarboard and tassel. And that's kind of true. You know, if you start saving when your child is born or on the way, you have 18 years approximately to save up the money you need for college. And, you know, the return on investments over time, you know, helps even out the good times with the bad times. And also gives you that, you know, effect of, you know, interest on interest, compounding interest over time by saving away money versus waiting till your student is in high school and then thinking that, oh, well, we got 3 to 4 years left here. We'll just start plugging away money. You could be in a variety of positions financially at that point. Maybe you are at your peak earning time, or maybe you're not. Maybe it happens during a pandemic, and your employment isn't as good as you thought it would be. So all things to keep in mind. Again, time is on your side if you start early. But the book moves on from there, talks about, you know, planning. It talks a little bit about, and a good plug here for our CISFA members, thinking about community college as part of a student's educational plan, whether that's the transfer or to get a certificate type of program taken care of. Certificates generally are those programs, 1 to 2 years, focused on a particular vocation or career, we should say nowadays. So it's an easy way, and usually if you're going to a community college nearby, it's a very affordable way to get through school. It's not to downgrade any for-profit schools out there, because there's a variety of them, good, better, not so good. But again, we also have some, I'm going to say there's public schools out there that are good, very good, or sometimes not so good in certain programs. You really do have to do your legwork about where you want to go to school and what you want to study. That's probably one of the areas that has received the most attention recently in the community colleges. Based upon a book that wasn't specific to financial aid, but was about redesigning community colleges and the way we help students get through. The biggest thing there, I'll just say off topic real quick, was the thought of not worrying about students coming right out of high school and knowing their exact academic program of study that they're going to take up at the community college, but getting them into a career pathway so that if we knew that they were interested into the hospitality or culinary arts world, we'd put them on the path where there may be 7 or 8 certificates along the way they could pick from, 3 or 4 associate degrees, maybe an associate degree for transfer to one of the local Cal States here in California, or a University of California school. But we'd at least get them on the path. From there, the student then could make their choices along the way and start to, you know, narrow down their field. But at least in their first semester or two, most, if not all, of the classes they take in that path would apply to any of those certificates or associate degrees that we just talked about. And so the idea now is to get them on these career pathways. And so you in a sense, take your hundreds of degrees and certificates at a college, like a community college like mine, or a larger one in the state. You boil it down to maybe 7 or 8 of these paths, and you get students on the path so that you're not worried about a student who's coming into your school and just taking general ed because they thought they wanted to explore themselves, but really with absolutely no focus. And that's where we really want to avoid have students going to just willy-nilly, I guess would be the way to say it, picking classes and such for what they want to do. And instead, keep them on a focused path. It really will help them along the way so that they can get out of what we used to call 2-year college in closer to 2 years. That's a kind of a novel idea these days. You know, the average community college student takes a little bit longer than 2 years, because that's really 2 years of full-time study, 15 or more units generally per semester to get through their program. When students see that full-time is only 12 units, that's unfortunately where students sometimes stop. They take only 4 3-unit classes in a semester, and it puts them behind the eight ball right away. Or they have to take some remedial classes. The good thing is now we have started to eliminate remedial classes in bulk, in a sense, at the community colleges, and instead come up with new pathways for that too. We have students do some self-assessing. We also add some supplemental instruction type classes to our entry level English 101 and math classes that are still college degree applicable classes, but it gives the students who might not be completely up to par on it the ability to have some supplemental help to get them through the class so that they don't have to take a non-degree applicable class, or what we call remedial sometimes, in order to get up to English 101 or whatever the math is that's required for your college degree. So there's a lot of stuff going on there. Let's get back to our initial topic, though. Books about financial aid. So my first selection here, and I definitely recommend it, How to Pay for College When You're Broke by Jessica Brown. Keeping in line with books that are more or less oriented for consumers, I've had this book and a couple copies I bought years ago because they haven't done updates every given year, called Filing the FAFSA. This is from Advisors. It's called The Advisor's Guide to Completing the Free Application for Federal Student Aid. And the book that I have, goodness, I'm trying to see what year this one was in. This was 2013. Now, they have made some updates since. I believe you can still find it out, at least on Amazon somewhere. There is a 2020 edition, it looks like. So we're probably good on that. But this book was put out by David Levy and Mark Kantrowitz. You'll hear the word or the names, at least you'll hear the name Mark Kantrowitz quite a bit in the financial aid field. He's a trustable man out there. He's written a number of books that I'm going to actually get to here and in our next segment. But he's not a financial aid professional per se, but he's someone who has studied and talked about and really gone into understanding financial aid. He's more on the scientific world type of thing. At this point, you know, he was noted as a nationally recognized expert on student financial aid scholarships and student loans. He had created finaid.org, which was a website that was all about general information about financial aid. I believe they've been bought and sold a couple of times to some different organizations that kind of wrap them up in other college-related material. But this book, Filing the FAFSA, for me, as I actually explained one time to David Levy, who I've known throughout the years. He's a financial aid director who's gone among a number of different colleges in California, Southern California here, and just an expert on financial aid. I called it the book, The Nerd's Guide to Financial Aid. And it gives you the in-depth information you need when you're working with a parent or a student on things like, how do you treat a timeshare as far as an asset? What is a Coogan account? when is it a student asset versus a parent asset? Is this income that we have got to go on a FAFSA? These kind of questions all get answered in this guide. And so I've always had a couple copies in my office, recommended it to other staff and such. I think with the FAFSA getting some updates here in just a matter of a couple years due to FAFSA simplification, I'm actually hoping the guys, Mark Kantrowitz and David Levy, or some others, pick up the ball and put out a new book to help us all, parents, students, and financial aid professionals, understand how to fill out our FAFSAs properly. While we're at that point in the show, we're going to take a little musical break, come back with some more book selections. And welcome back for our second cup segment here on the What's Brewing CISFA show. Time for a refill. I know everyone's missing Dana. Listening to me can't be that much fun, can it? We do have listeners from outside the United States, so I want to thank all of them for listening to the show. I think we've had India, Canada, Venezuela, somewhere over in Europe, Mexico, and a couple other places covered in the last couple months. So whether you're using a VPN or whatever, hey, give us a shout out if you are listening to our show and where you're from. Email us at wbccsfa@gmail.com. So that's wbccsfaaa@gmail.com. We'd like to know where everyone's listening. But back to our topic of the day for our show. Books about financial aid. I'm going to run through a couple of these kind of quick. This one I came out a number of years ago, back when Twitter was more of a Twitter thing. The book is called Twisdoms, as in wisdom from Twitter, Twisdoms About Paying for College. This book was also done by Mark Kantrowitz. Again, what I liked about this book, it was short and to the point. It's about 5-6 years old, but literally it's like little 140 characters before Twitter went wild and upped the number of characters you could have in a tweet about financial aid. And so it's literally something as simple as November is National Scholarship Month. Who knew? Or dealing with financial difficulty. Here's one. Borrowers who graduate with too much student loan debt often have problems with their credit cards and other forms of consumer credit too. Increasing awareness of spending patterns is the first step towards exercising financial restraint. So it's almost like a little bit of Adam Smith sneaking in here with words of wisdom in a Twitter-sized bite. But there's just hundreds of these put together on the financial aid topic. And if anything, it's little reminders to yourself or things that you could put out there for our students and such and rework it a little bit. But Twisdoms About Paying for College, small little book, Mark Kantrowitz. Another one that came out recently that I brought up on the show before is How to Appeal for More College Financial Aid, The Secrets to Negotiating a Better Financial Aid Offer and Getting More Financial Aid in the First Place. Another Mark Kantrowitz book. I believe somebody over at NASFA did the review of this book. And again, it was a decent review. And I'll say, I haven't read the book myself. It's a very good book. I know for some people out there in my profession, we don't like to hear about negotiating for financial aid. Or we say it isn't a negotiation, it's about an appeal. And so at least, if anything, everybody, the title of the book is clear. How to Appeal for More College Financial Aid. It's, it's not so much the secrets of, but it's really to help guide parents through the understanding of, first and foremost, the information you put on the FAFSA, how is it used to determine your need. In other words, for those who've done a FAFSA before or have heard about it, you know, the FAFSA is a free application for federal student aid. Keep in mind, here in the state of California, for our undocumented students, we have a completely separate state-only process called the California DREAM Act application, which mimics much of what the FAFSA does. In essence, though, what a FAFSA does is calculate a family's ability to contribute. It all boils down, all the information on that form, to what's called the expected family contribution. Now, yes, this is something that will change in a couple years, but let's stay in the present. We'll talk about the future on another show. The expected family contribution, in a sense, is in a dollar amount, the amount the federal government believes a family could contribute towards that year's cost of college. So it's already factored in the income and assets, the number of people in the household, and all those other things that come up with that number. Now, that number could be as low as zero for many students, because based upon the family's income and assets and all, they would not have the financial wherewithal to contribute towards the cost of college on top of all the other living expenses that the family has. It could be higher. The higher that expected family contribution number goes, the less aid a student gets. But what happens is this book here, How to Appeal for More College Financial Aid, helps first parents understand the information they've put on the FAFSA to start with, and then what they could do if things have changed. Probably the biggest thing, you know, we look at this pandemic is probably the one time that this has happened a lot. You know, you do your FAFSA, you put on the income from a prior year as required by the form, and then it calculates your expected family contribution. What if things have changed? What if you're no longer working? Someone has retired. Someone was laid off. In this pandemic, what if your job just disappeared? What if you're only getting unemployment? What if a passing of a spouse? What if you adopted two children and the family is much larger? All these are the kinds of things that a college could look at in an appeal type process and figure out if those type of changes would make a change in the expected family contribution. So this book is really good. I think it's a good reference. It doesn't tell, just so you know, financial aid professionals out there, don't worry, it's not like handing out secrets or anything. Our processes should be transparent. But it also just keeps to the meat and bones of things, of understanding both need-based aid and a little bit on merit-based aid too. Now, switching over here to a couple books that are more along the lines of books for the financial aid professional. These I've had for a little while. There's a book out there a number of years ago called Game of Loans, The Rhetoric and Reality of Student Debt. Probably not a bad read to have now, seeing that student debt is in the forefront in the news, at least in the education sector, as we keep hearing about the potentiality for some kind of loan reduction, debt reduction for students. But this book here, put out by Beth Akers and Matthew Chingos, Game of Loans, The Rhetoric and Reality of Student Debt. Not a big read, but a decent read. I've got little bookmarks all over here. Remind me things like here I wrote or highlighted. Students should think of student loans that pay for the consumption part of the college experience in the same way they think about credit card debt. It enables them to enjoy something right away, but they will have to pay for it later. Very true. Or students paying more largely because taxpayers are paying less, but there have also been modest increases in average spending levels at community colleges. Colleges are spending less and students are paying less. You know, things like that. It's a good book. Got a few charts. And what I like best to know that when you have a book that's going to talk about more technical type issues, lots of notes at the end about from the chapters on where they source their material. So Game of Loans, definitely worth getting. On a related topic, I bought this book because this person was coming to speak to my district about not just financial aid, but higher education in general and how we can address these type of issues. The book Paying the Price by Sarah Goldrick Robb. And so she's a big-time studier of financial aid in higher education, co-author of Reinventing Financial Aid, which would have been the next book I would talk about, but the show is running a little long today. But Sarah Goldrick Robb's book, Paying the Price, College Costs, Financial Aid, and the Betrayal of the American Dream. So it's not as just a technical issue type of book, but it's really a book about understanding everything from student loans the affording to pay for college as one little subsection in one of the chapters here says, you have to FAFSA, which is true. We have to get everyone to at least apply for aid. Again, unless you are going to self-finance all of college, really do the FAFSA. As I've always told students and parents who have had some hesitancy, it will not obligate you to anything. If you find out, yes, you are a millionaire and you are not getting any free money like a federal Pell Grant or a state's Cal Grant, at least you know. Now, if you never file a FAFSA, or for our dreamers out there, the California Dream Act application, you'll know how you're paying for college. You're paying for college from your money, or you're taking out a loan that maybe you could have avoided. Again, loans are money that have to be repaid, things to avoid if you can. And again, apply for what you could receive in financial aid. Free money oftentimes. So paying the price, a good book overall, a little longer of a read, but certainly worthwhile. Just to mention it, Reinventing Financial Aid, Charting a New Course to College Affordability by Andrew Kelly and Sarah Goldrick Robb as editors. Again, another book that I have lots of little tape tabs here to help me find parts of it when I'm doing a little bit of research. But certainly a nice book. All of these are generally available at your local bookstore, or at least your Barnes & Noble, or if you're doing the online thing, you can always go out to Amazon. The last book I'm just going to mention here before we get into our last zip segment, a book called Confessions of a Scholarship Winner by Christina Ellis. It is the secrets that helped me win $500,000 in free money for college and how you can too. There you go. That's the kind of bottom line. Nice little paperback book, understanding. Again, probably the biggest thing for scholarships that confuses people is, yes, they are all separate forms generally. There is not just one website or place that you can go to find out about scholarships. Yes, it's going to take some legwork, but probably the one selling point I try to do, and again, I don't have a scholarship program that I'm trying to sell, when I talk to parents and students is keep in mind, every dollar matters. So a student might go, oh, it's only a $250 scholarship at my school, but I meet all the criteria and I don't know who else would. Or it's a local scholarship or a regional or a national one. And you're like, oh, it's only $500. Think about it this way. Every dollar you get in a scholarship, even if it's a one-time thing and it's not a renewable scholarship for multiple years, is a dollar that a student doesn't have to borrow with interest. Or a dollar that the student doesn't have to work for in a job, either off campus or a job on campus in like a federal work study job. And or it's a dollar that doesn't have to be begged, borrowed from your parents. Keep that in mind and you'll consider applying for some more scholarships. Let's take another short musical break here, everybody. Moving to our last segment of the day. And just like that, we are back for our last sip segment. Get that last sip of your hot or cold beverage out there. The last book I'm going to just mention here, maybe making an I dare you to, because even for myself, it might be an I dare you to read completely. I've started on it, but, you know, and it's even aimed at me. It's The Art and Science of Student Aid Administration in the 21st Century by Joseph Russo. I think this was put out by NASFA, or at least, published by NASFA. Hey, there you go. So The Art and Science of Student Aid Administration in the 21st Century. You'd think that I would have had taken some time to read it, but this is a little more dense of a book. It is a tiny little book. It's only 130 pages about. Go out, get it, read it. Even if you are like, well, I'm not a financial aid director. Do I need to really read this? Sometimes I think, I know coming up through the ranks, even when I did, you think, oh, that's really for the financial aid director to understand. Well, maybe someday you'll be a financial aid director, or you want to be a financial aid director. I really don't know why you would, but I'm just kidding. You probably do, just because, again, you get to have some influence on how you run your office. You really get to understand how financial aid fits into the broad scheme of enrollment management and how things work on your campus. It's not a bad idea to have a few books that are always above and beyond where you are currently in life. So we're at that last part of the show here. I'm going to bring up the music a little bit. I do have an I Dare You To selection for today. Although not given to me in words so much as a recommendation, but in talking to a friend, Kevin, who was busy watching a two-hour first episode of the Hemingway documentary series on PBS, done by Ken Burns. It certainly sounds like this would be a selection that would be recommended by him. So go out and get it. Watch it online. Watch it on PBS. Hemingway documentary series by Ken Burns. Otherwise, that's all we have time for today. But don't forget, there's always our next episode. I'm really hoping Dana will join us again starting next week. I want to thank you, our audience, for tuning in. And again, if you have something to say or you have topics you want us to discuss, email us at wbcisfa@gmail.com. Find this and all What's Brewing CISFA podcasts on Google Podcasts, your Apple Podcast app, Spotify, Pandora, iHeartRadio, and the TuneIn app on your Amazon Echo by using Alexa. What's Brewing CISFA is a production of Studio 1051, a creative collaboration of myself and Dana. This has been episode number 82, recorded the morning of Friday, April 16th, 2021. Have a great day, everyone, and of course, have a great weekend.